Diabetes Insights, Breakthroughs and Innovators. The EASD TV podcast from the annual meeting of the European Association for the Study of Diabetes.
You're watching EASD TV. My name's Vivian Parry, and we are now going to talk a bit more about the Diabetologia Symposium, which was a very, very popular symposium. So we have with us Hood Tabbitt from the University of Manchester in the UK and Helen Murphy from Norwich, also in the UK. And Hood, your specialism is technology in hospitals, and Helen, it's technology in pregnancy. So Hood, let's start with you. What are the particular issues that you wrote about and talked about for the Diabetologia Symposium and its supplement?
Well, the main issue we have at the moment with managing diabetes in hospitals is that we've had various guidelines published so far from international and national societies, but the implementation of those guidelines for managing diabetes in hospital is still far away from where it should be. And the main reason is because at the moment, most hospitals are struggling with lack of staffing and also lack of expertise, because most people with diabetes are admitted to hospital not because of their diabetes but for other conditions. So they're looked after by non-specialty teams. So implementing quite complex guidelines can be quite challenging. So this is where I think technology may play a bigger role in the future towards supporting teams looking after people with diabetes so that it's more effectively managed and safely managed as well. But as I might explain later on, more data is still needed because this is still a relatively new area in diabetes technology.
Now, one of the issues that people living with diabetes have is actually they're rather expert at managing their own condition. And they go into hospital and somebody who knows nothing about them and their diabetes then takes everything away and says, oh, we'll do that. And they make a complete mess of it. Or 100%. As we would say in the UK, a complete pig's ear.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, people with diabetes have been educated and trained how to look after their condition. They've lived with it for so long. So when they are in hospital, most of the time, not always, they're usually unwell and they're not be capable of looking after themselves. So their self-management skills goes out of the window temporarily, hopefully. But it is during this period when they're most vulnerable because they'll be looked after by hospital staff. And it's not because hospital staffs don't care. It's just because they don't have the skills. It is quite a challenging area. But because of that, people with diabetes feel very vulnerable because for the first time or maybe several times, they have to hand over their care that they've been doing every single day for most of their lives towards somebody else. And I think this is where a lot of audits have shown that people with diabetes don't feel safe in hospital because their glycemic control, which can be sometimes quite dangerously high or low, could be at risk while they're there.
And this is where really Hood and I's work overlap, because of course, looking after pregnant women, these are not like sick inpatients. So these are women who are well and healthy. And again, as you say, Vivian, they're very used to managing their own condition. They're used to being able to decide how they want to deliver their babies. They have the choice whether they would like a vaginal birth, whether they want a cesarean section. But then they're told sometimes take off your sensor or take off your pump. So actually we've together with that's called the JBDS, the Joint British Diabetes Society guidelines, really advocated for women to remain in control of how they manage their diabetes. So we've seen a real transformation in inpatient care for women with diabetes who now continue wearing the glucose sensors. And you know, the real difference that makes is for a woman who might be in labor. Previously, she would be woken up every hour overnight to have finger stick capillary glucose monitoring. And then guess what? She's exhausted by the time it comes to having the baby. But nowadays, she stays on her CGM. The midwife can document it every hour. The woman can be asleep if she's sleeping and just feel better rested and prepared for birth.
So, you know, Helen has given a really good example there of putting control back to the person with the diabetes. And there's, you know, there's planned surgery, and maybe a better method of looking after people would be to give patients the information about what's likely to happen and how they can, you know, what they can do. I mean, of course, it doesn't cover all of emergencies, of course not. But is that an approach as well for planned surgery?
Yes, so there has been consensus published where in those people with diabetes admitted to hospital, where due to the procedure or their conditions, they are still able to self-manage. Yes, they are still, if they're able to self-manage the devices or their condition, they're allowed to do so. And this is what most hospitals and most healthcare organizations are doing. They're empowering people in hospital to look after their condition. But in situations where they're not able to, due to their being unwell or being unconscious for surgery, for example, there are certain situations where, yes, they will still be allowed to use the devices. But I think what's critical is to ensure that other healthcare professionals in hospital are aware of it. I think in hospital, we have to be, we have to acknowledge that the majority of, I would say, staff members in hospital, doctors, nurses, and other healthcare professionals are not familiar with diabetes devices and technologies. And sometimes if they're not familiar or aware of it, they will be afraid of it or they'll be dubious of whether it will work, and they will, as Professor Murphy say, remove it from the patient, sometimes without telling the patient. So that to me is, you know, obviously not right, but it's about creating awareness, number one. Number two, education. And number three, support.
And then I would just add to that by saying the technology companies have a real role to play here. So at the moment, we use 3 or 4 different sorts of glucose sensors. These are busy hospital staff in emergency and labor wards and theaters. And these data that the person with diabetes has on the sensor are hidden behind proprietary firewalls. So if you don't have the patient's username, the password, you may, the hospital staff may not be able to access the data. And in a publicly funded system like the NHS, where we as taxpayers pay to support the use of the technology, yet our hospital staff are not given access to it, that urgently needs to stop. And the companies need to up the game. And as technology becomes rolled out into mainstream care, it needs to be accessible to all patients and to all healthcare professionals.
Companies, I hope you're listening to this, because this is a really, really important point. And actually something I'd quite like to take up as a journalist in the media, because it just can't be allowed to continue. Let's turn to pregnancy specifically now. And at the moment, CGM is recommended for all women with existing type 1.
That's right.
And how about type 2?
So I'm going to just start on the type 1 story, because that actually began here at the EASD 7 years ago, when we published the first pivotal study showing that, as compared to finger stick monitoring, CGM allowed women to have better glucose levels and babies with fewer neonatal complications. Because there were fewer babies going into neonatal intensive care units, we found that the use of CGM...
Very cost-effective.
More than cost-effective. It was actually cost-saving. We recently modelled, and we presented yesterday in an EASD Health Economics Symposium, that the use of CGM saves the NHS approximately £12 million per year for women with type 1 diabetes, based on about 2,000 pregnancies. We now know that with the support of NHS England, in particular Partha Kaur, who has really championed for women, 98% of all women with type 1 diabetes use CGM during pregnancy and actually are also allowed and supported to continue it during labour and birth. So that has been a phenomenal success.
We had Partha Kaur in the studio yesterday, and he is a phenomenon in the way that he's pushed that through the system.
Yeah, unprecedented anywhere in the world. And whilst we hear lots of bad news stories about the NHS and how it's crippled at the moment and really struggling, actually this is a good news story for the NHS. At a time when pregnant women are literally terrified of giving birth, we've been able to show in the highest risk women about a 30% reduction in severe birth defects and in babies that die. So this is a huge success for the implementation, national implementation, real world implementation of technology based on an original study. And when it comes to women with type 2, actually listening to those women, they very strongly feel that they also deserve high quality evidence, and they do not want to see CGM rolled out. They do not want to be treated just the same as women with type 1, which is quite interesting to us. Because I look across the UK and many colleagues think, okay, CGM was phenomenally successful in type 1, so let's do the same in type 2. And that sounds good, but when you stop to think about it a little bit more deeply, we don't even know what the glucose targets should be for women with type 2. We know women with type 2 are actually probably even more sensitive to very small changes in maternal glucose than those with type 1. So the potential for great benefit is there. But we also know, like Hood will experience outside of pregnancy, that there are many other treatments available for type 2 diabetes. And is technology the answer? Should we be investing more in the anti-obesity medications and supporting women with type 2 to enter pregnancy with, you know, less overweight and obesity, with lower BMI? Is that going to be a more effective strategy for supporting them in their pregnancies? They've not been the attention of care. We know that those with early onset type 2 represent less than 5% of the whole population with type 2 in research studies. So I tell my pregnant women, having type 2 diabetes before the age of 40, this is not the same as the type 2 diabetes in your granny, in your mother, in your grandfather, or, you know, or in your own dad. This is a totally much more severe condition when it comes on at an earlier age. And we really need to, the medical profession needs to step up and create a healthcare system that is fit for purpose for this group of marginalized patients.
And finally, let's turn to gestational diabetes, because there's been an absolutely massive rise in gestational diabetes. Actually, particularly, I think it first started to really rocket during the pandemic, didn't it?
There always have been health inequalities, and I would go back and say maybe it started during austerity. So the real rise I've seen has been over the last decade. And we know that, just like obesity, that women who are affected with gestational diabetes and type 2 diabetes, we see 7 times more pregnancies in those women who come from more deprived communities. So in the general maternal population, as women are having their babies a little bit older, they're entering pregnancy with higher BMI. This is exacerbated in women who live in poorer communities. In my own clinic, I now see more women with gestational diabetes per month than I did per year 7 or 8 years ago.
Yeah, that's an extraordinary rise.
The scale of that, and that's without a change in diagnostic criteria. And you're absolutely right to say there was an impact of COVID, and COVID has increased or exacerbated the underlying healthcare inequalities. The real problem with gestational diabetes is actually women who are screened and treated will have healthier babies in the background maternity population. So once we capture these women, we do a good job in our pregnancy services for 8 to 10 weeks. But then we fail to actually recognize that gestational diabetes, even if it's called gestational, is not a condition that's limited to pregnancy.
And we send people out the door with their baby, yeah. And then we forget that these are the women who are actually
developing type 2 diabetes.
So we kind of forget that we should be, you know, bringing them back.
Absolutely. And we know we should, but our healthcare systems are so siloed. And this is particularly an issue in maternity and in women's healthcare. The systems are so siloed that when I diagnose a woman with gestational diabetes, guess what? I've got maybe 10 different codes I might apply. And only if I have the right one that works for that GP on their IT system will the GP know the woman has had diabetes.
I fear we're getting into the IT problems of the NHS. Ladies and gentlemen, you do not want to get into the IT problems of the NHS.
Absolutely not. But until we sort them and have systems that speak to each other, we in the maternity profession can blame the GPs for not following up the women. They will blame us because we've not given them the right information. We need to sort this out. These women deserve lifelong care. This is, you know, having diabetes affects women across the life course, not just during pregnancy. And we have this unique opportunity, which is, again, the NHS is leading the world in the diabetes prevention programs. All we need to do is sign up every woman with gestational diabetes to a diabetes prevention program, and we would massively reduce the risk of type 2.
So, Hood, we've talked about technology as an adjunct, but we've also talked about technology that's not there in some senses. So that brings the, you know, full circle, the Diabetologist Symposium. One last word from you about technology and, you know, what you took away from the symposium as a whole.
Well, technology has a massive potential for many types of diabetes and many conditions where diabetes are managed, either in or outpatients. I completely agree with what Professor Murphy said. There needs to be a better way of building an infrastructure first towards diagnosing and managing diabetes before we can say technology can help support it, because I think technology has its potential, but without the support, the education and the people to look after it, it's not going to meet its potential, and it might actually become a hindrance or a burden to some people.
Thank you both very much. Very, very interesting discussion there. And there'll be more on ESD TV very soon. Bye for now.
Thank you for joining us on the podcast of the European Association for the Study of Diabetes. We hope you enjoyed today's insights. If you did, go ahead and hit subscribe and you'll always stay up to date with the latest in diabetes research and discoveries. And if you'd like to dive deeper, you can find plenty more information at EASD.org.